A little over a decade ago, a well-known Christian magazine called Discipleship Journal took a survey of all of its readers. Discipleship Journal is one of those niche magazines. It appeals to a very specific group of people. Has anybody ever heard of Discipleship Journal? Is that a magazine you're familiar with? Yeah, it's the kind of magazine that appeals to people who are very, very, very committed to their Christian faith. They're all about, you know, reading the Bible for 5 hours every morning and, like, praying insane amounts of time. And just, they're very serious and intentional about their spiritual growth. Well, Discipleship Journal decided to take this survey to ask them, what were the greatest spiritual challenges that they faced in their walk to honor God with their lives? I thought that was a really interesting experiment. And so I read the results with great interest. Coming in at number 9 of the most common spiritual obstacle that Christians face in their growth was lying, deception, just habitually, you know, shading the truth, sort of slanting things in your favor. Number 8 was gluttony. Number 7 was envy. 6 and 5 were tied. Lust and anger, obstacles to spiritual growth. Number 4 was laziness. Number 3 was self-centeredness. Number 2 was pride. And the number 1 thing that Christians in America felt was hindering their spiritual growth: materialism, greed, affluenza, the desire for things, for more and more stuff. 2 things struck me about that list. First, how the 7 deadly sins just sort of seem to emerge from a spontaneous survey of a large group of Christians. What are the obstacles to spiritual growth in your life? And the second thing that really struck me is that although pride has traditionally been considered to be the worst of the 7 deadly sins, in America, people who are very committed to following Christ said, we live in such a materialistic, stuff-driven society that greed, that materialism, that this desire for things is the biggest obstacle to my being a serious follower of Christ. Greed's a big deal in modern America. And greed's also a big deal here at Stanford. There's a man named Collis P. Huntington. And he once said, everything that is not nailed down is mine. And anything I can pry up is not nailed down. I love that. You couldn't express greed more brilliantly if you tried hard, I don't think. He really exemplified it in his life. Has anybody ever heard of Collis P. Huntington? You actually have, and you probably don't realize it. He and his partners finagled this deal with the government, whereby the government was going to give them something like $24 million to start this venture. They were putting no cash up front. They were then able to go to investors using the $24 million as leverage, build up that, and get about $50 to $60 million in additional investments, all with none of their own money. They built the enterprise, and they sunk $50 million into labor and into hard materials. And then they gave themselves a $24 million bonus for job well done. And then they turned the company over to the shareholders with no cash and with a defective system. And Collis P. Huntington and Leland Stanford made off like robber barons with the Transcontinental Railroad. And as a result, today, Stanford University is a very nice place. Because of this philosophy that anything that is not nailed down is mine, and anything I can pry up is not nailed down. Now, this is not a slam on Leland Stanford meeting. Actually, I think Stanford gets a shaft a lot of times. He was a great man with great flaws, like most great people are. But tonight, his flaw is very much in focus. Greed, this desire for more and more things, the desire to get more. We've already talked about envy as we were covering the 7 deadly sins. Here's the fundamental difference between envy and greed. Envy is concerned with what you have compared to what I have, or rather, with what I have compared to what you have, and trying to even up or to one better you. Greed could care less about you. Greed is just about increase. It's about more. Greed is just, you got programming people, C++. It's just plus. It's just more. It's like an infinite while loop that never ends. You know, cash plus. That's what greed is. A desire to increase without a concern for anything else. All the computer people are laughing and all the IR people are like, huh? So let me ask you this. What really is it that makes greed so wrong? And isn't to criticize greed really to criticize the entire society in which we live? I mean, we live in a capitalistic society. And isn't capitalism founded upon the notion of greed being harnessed for the collective good or whatever? Well, first, let me say, I would not be afraid to criticize our entire society if I thought it was called for. And in fact, I think it is called for in a lot of cases. Our society is really at a moral low point that it hasn't been at in a very long time. Just The stuff you see happening at Abu Ghraib and the really endemic sort of abuses happening in our military are not accidental to our society. I think they're a byproduct of some deep rot that's expressing itself in some pretty flagrant ways around the world. However, I do not think that to condemn greed is to condemn capitalism per se. Another thing I want to throw in is I do not usually talk about politics in Chi Alpha, and this is not going to be a political meeting. I'm going to leave capitalism by and large to the side, except to say this. To criticize greed is not to intrinsically damn capitalism. It's simply to say that one of the virtues of capitalism is that it can deal with both altruistic and selfish people. And any political system has got to, at the core level, deal with the fact that a lot of people are jerks. They're evil, they're twisted, they're warped. And any system that relies upon the goodness of mankind to do its job is not going to work very long at all. Having said that, I think that in America, we've really caught the negative end of capitalism right now. We are very much more in the greed-driven end of things than in the altruistic or the virtue-driven side of things. Alan Greenspan actually said this not too long ago. He was giving testimony to Congress, and it made, I believe, if I remember right, it made front page of the New York Times the next day. He said that a spirit of infectious greed had set into America's boardrooms, and that was why we were seeing so much trouble in the economy with places like Enron and all sorts of other things. And he did not think that it was good for our economy at all for greed to run rampant like that. So what exactly is it that's wrong with greed? I'm coming from the premise that something is wrong with greed. What is it? How could I articulate that? How could I demonstrate it to someone who is unpersuaded, someone who is like an Ayn Rand libertarian, who's like, greed is good, selfishness is a virtue? How could I explain that to them? Well, here are a couple of different negative consequences of greed. I'm going to be speaking out of the Bible tonight. I think that most of what I say, even if someone does not accept the Bible as the Word of God, they would still find credible and plausible, just because it makes so much sense, and I'll try to illustrate where I can. First, according to the Bible, greed is unable to bring happiness. Now, if you have your notes set with you, I'm going to be referencing that a lot more today than I have in the other series on the seven deadly sins, the other sermons in the series. So if you want to just take a look at that, it will help you follow along. Greed is unable to bring happiness. Whoever loves money never has money enough. Whoever loves wealth is never satisfied with his income. Ecclesiastes 5:10. This is a truth that has been stumbled upon by society after society. The Romans had a proverb back in their day. Wealth, money, is like seawater. The more you drink, the thirstier you get. Why is that? It's because money is not worth anything in and of itself. Really, money's not. I mean, if all you had was a pile of... Okay, this is perfectly illustrated by the story of King Midas. You've heard this story, right? That Midas prayed to one of his gods, and he was given the gift to turn anything he touched into gold. And so he was going to be the richest man alive. And so he would touch a chair and it would turn to a solid gold chair. He would touch a cup, it would turn to a solid gold cup. He hugged his wife, she turned into solid gold. He was horrified. And when he sat down to eat, all the food that he tried to eat turned to solid gold. The drinks he tried to drink turned to solid gold. And Midas had to seek surcease from the gods, or else he would have starved to death. Money in and of itself is literally worth nothing. And so if your fixation is on money to bring you happiness, you will never be satisfied. Because the money itself is meaningless. It's only the things that you can do with money. Now, there's a lot of things you can do with money. But even then, what you can accomplish with money alone is very limited. Henrik Ibsen put it this way. Money may be the husk of many things, but it is not the core, the kernel. It brings you food, but not appetite, medicine, but not health, acquaintances, but not friends, servants, but not loyalty, days of joy, but not peace or happiness. In other words, once someone convinces themselves that money is the solution to their problems, they have locked themselves into a never-ending cycle of needing more, because the money will never solve the problems by itself that it was meant to fix. You have to have a much broader perspective on what this whole thing called wealth is all about. According to the Bible, money, greed, can cause conflict. Proverbs 28:25, it just says greed causes fighting. Now, if you don't believe it, I encourage you to borrow $25 from a friend and then pretend that you didn't. And see how long that friendship lasts. Money sends relationships south faster than almost anything else you can imagine. It's really amazing. And so if you have a bad attitude towards money, that will creep out and affect almost every relationship in your life, especially once you get married and have kids. Because relationships of a romantic sort and relationships of a parental sort are all about cash. They cost a lot. Just think about your parents right now. I'm assuming for most of you, your parents are footing a large part of your bill for coming to Stanford. Not all parents are willing to do that. Not all parents are willing to do that at all, and it creates very bad relationships in the family, very bad relationships. Greed, money, is often a motivator for bad religion, for religious charlatans. 2 Peter 2, verses 3 and 14, it says in 3, "In their greed, these teachers will exploit you with stories they have made up." There are religious predators out there. People have figured out that you can make a fast buck between someone's head and their heart by just plugging into that spiritual thing and trying to exploit it for your own gain. I don't know if you, who has ever heard of Dr. Gene Scott? You guys ever see that guy on television? Oh man, you're not going to get this too much. He died on Monday. Dr. Gene Scott, yeah. He was like Willie Nelson gone bad and spiritual. It was really weird. He had this creepy look about him. He has a connection to Stanford. I forgot the drum roll. He has this creepy connection to Stanford. He actually had his doctorate from Stanford in the philosophies of education. Really, really bright guy. And he went on to found this huge religious broadcasting network. He actually took over the pastor of the first church in America to ever own a broadcasting station down in Los Angeles. And he just began to do this really bizarre late night show where he would get up and he'd smoke a cigar. He'd sit there on a stool and he would just go off. I mean, he'd have women in bikinis sitting next to him every once in a while. He'd cut to random shots of his prize horses competing in these equestrian shows. He'd get up and periodically, he'd just say, "You know what? I don't hear the phones ringing. I ain't preaching another word until you people start giving money." And he'd just sit there. You know, he'd get letters from people. "Hey, I got this letter from a woman. She said, 'Dear Dr. Scott, I'm so grateful for your ministry. I only have $5 in the bank, and I gave 4 of them to your ministry.' Well, boo-hoo-hoo, like I care. That $4 really helped." I mean, but people were fascinated. They just couldn't get enough of this guy. It was like watching a train wreck in slow motion. It was like horrifying yet entrancing. And actually, estimates are, no one knows. He actually was very well politically connected. At the one time the IRS was investigating his ministries, he actually had a law passed by the California state legislature saying it was illegal for the IRS to investigate nonprofit organizations in the state of California for that crime that he was accused of. That's how much clout he had while the investigation is going on. Estimates are he took in about $1 million a month. Now, in theory, he says he only received $1 in salary each year, plus unlimited expenses. And expenses apparently included chauffeured limousines, Lear jets, the aforementioned horse stables, an incredible art collection that would blow your mind, in which he felt free to mix his own work. So it's like, you know, going along, you know, Michelangelo, Dr. Scott, Rodin. You know. He was so egocentric. One time he was asked, you know, "So what do you do with all that money that you get?" He says, "People want to know what I do with all the money I get? I spend it." Absolutely hilarious. But the thing is, there are these religious charlatans out there. And now, I have no idea whether he's in heaven or hell right now. It's not my place to actually judge that. I have my suspicions. But I really hope he's in heaven. But he was, whatever else he was, a very, very false teacher. He was a bad man. He was like Balaam in the Old Testament, who was led astray by the love of money and had an opportunity to do God glory. And instead built his own empire. And that can happen. You need to be very, very careful for the rest of your life when you leave here. Watch out for how the religious groups you associate with talk about their money. Because there are many people who think that religion is a means to profit. Run away. Run and don't look away. Now, that's not to say that religious leaders should never talk about money. They should a lot. Because money is very important to people. And if religious leaders are not talking about what's important to people, they're not doing their job. But watch the way they do it. There are ethical and unethical ways, and there's boundaries you need to observe. And there are people here at Stanford who are unethical in the way they teach money. Anyway, money is a root of all kinds of evil. Probably the best-known verse in the Bible on money. Money is a root of all kinds of evil. 1 Timothy 6, 9 through 10. "People who want to get rich fall into temptation and a trap and into many foolish and harmful desires that plunge men into ruin and destruction. For the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil. Some people, eager for money, have wandered from the faith and pierced themselves with many griefs." One clarification, by the way, you will note it says a root of all kinds of evil, not the root of all evil, as you frequently hear it misquoted. That's a non-trivial difference. It's the difference between the Bible being accurate and not. Obviously, money is not the root of all evil. But I think it's very legitimate to say it is a root of all kinds of evil. The love, and it's not money itself, actually. It's the love of money that is a root of all kinds of evil. It messes people up. When people begin... Okay, here's a very simple equation of life. Love people, use things. Love people, use things. When you twist that equation around, which is what too many people in our society do, and you begin to use people and love things, all kinds of evil results. Love people, use things. It reminds me of a story. There was a very rich man in a town who was hated by everyone in the town, and he didn't know why. So he went to see the town minister, and he said, "Preacher, I don't understand why everybody hates me." He said, "Look out the window and tell me what you see." He looked out the window and he saw children playing in the park. He saw couples walking along the road. He said, "I see people." "All right, now turn around. Look into that mirror and tell me what you see." "I see myself." "So?" He said, "All a mirror is a window with silver on the back. The silver in your life is keeping you from seeing other people, and all you see is yourself. All you're thinking about are your own needs because you become consumed with the love of money." When you begin to treat money, things, as more important than people, you devalue them. And you begin to treat them as objects to be used to fulfill your own needs. And horrible, horrible things result. If you don't believe it, just ask the traders at Enron. Greed, according to the Bible, is idol worship. Now, I don't want to spend a lot of time here. Colossians 3:5, Ephesians 5:5, Luke 16:13. I talk about idolatry frequently enough that I think most of you know what I believe about it. Basically, to worship an idol is anything that you derive your sense of security or significance from. If you get your primary sense of security or significance from something, that's what you worship. And if it's not God, it's idolatry. And money in a post-polytheistic society is the prime rival to give people their sense of security and significance. I mean, why else do people pile up wealth if not to become important in the eyes of other people, significance? And not to give them a sense of safety in the midst of a treacherous world, security. Whilst people try to kill themselves to add more onto the pile, security and significance. It is idolatry. And as a result, it makes God very, very angry. Isaiah 57:17. I was enraged by his sinful greed. I don't think I have to draw home why it angers God so much. I mean, it's just because it hurts people. And God loves people, so he hates things that hurt people. Greed is something that Paul is very adamant about. Should not even be a whiff of in the church. There should be no hint of greed in any group of people who claims to honor God with their lives. But among you, there must be not even a hint of sexual immorality or of any kind of impurity or of greed, because these are improper for God's holy people. It's not enough that we're not greedy. We have to be far from greed, far from even the appearance of greed, because of how damaging and corrupting it is in people's lives. In fact, Paul goes on to say that greed is grounds for kicking someone out of the church. If someone is greedy, they get the boot. According to 1 Corinthians 5:11, "I am writing you that you must not associate with anyone who calls himself a Christian, but is sexually immoral or greedy, an idolater or a slanderer, a drunkard or a swindler. With such a person, do not even eat." This is a big deal to God because... Well, let me ask you this. How many people that you know have a negative image of the church specifically because of the way they think the church deals with money? Pretty big percentage, isn't it? Paul knew that if you allowed this very worldly way of thinking, this materialistic, this affluenza, the desire to acquire, to drive the church, it would corrupt everything that Christ stood for. It reminds me once. I'm almost certain it's an apocryphal story, but Thomas Aquinas supposedly was talking with the Pope in Rome one day. And the Pope took Thomas Aquinas out and showed him all the glories of the Vatican. Just the magnificent statuary and the painting and the ornate gold, this, that, and the other. And he said, referencing the story from Acts chapter 3, I think, "No longer can the church say, silver and gold have we none." And Aquinas shot right back, "Yes, but neither can we say, rise and walk in the name of Christ." Money, the love of money, corrupts something very pure and holy and important to God. It actually says that greed undermines salvation. 1 Corinthians 6:10. For do you not know the wicked will not inherit the kingdom of God? Do not be deceived. Skip, skip, skip. Nor the greedy will inherit the kingdom of God. Ephesians 5:5. For this can be sure, no greedy person has any inheritance in the kingdom of Christ and of God. Greed can actually destroy your relationship with Jesus Christ. We're pretty sure that Paul wrote the letters of Colossians and Philemon right next to one another. A couple of reasons for that. One of the biggest is you look at the relationships that are in the letters. Paul almost always signs his letters with, like, not just me, but like the people who are with me. So like Mark, my buddy, Epaphras, these guys, they all say hi too. Well, Colossians and Philemon, it's the same group of people. And so the implication is that either were written, you know, maybe the same day or within like a week or two of one another. And both of those letters mention a guy named Demas. D-E-M-A-S. Demas, we know, was a fellow minister of Paul. It says in Philemon 1:24 that Demas, my fellow worker, he's right there with Paul. He's hanging with Paul in Paul's first imprisonment in the prison cells of Rome. Paul gets released. He goes back out, does some ministry, and then gets rearrested and brought to Rome again. And something interesting has happened. Now, Demas is not with Paul anymore. Instead, Paul, in his hour of greatest need, writes his very last letter that we're aware of to his good friend Timothy, his son in the faith, the person who he's invested his emotional life into. And he says, "Do your best to come to me quickly, for Demas, because he loved this world, has deserted me and is gone to Thessalonica." Demas, because he loved the things of this world, because he loved this world, because he loved stuff more than people, because he loved stuff more than God, has abandoned me. Now, we don't know what happened in Demas's life after that. We do know it's the last time he's mentioned in the Bible. Unlike the other people, Aristarchus, Luke, Mark, who wrote Gospels. Not Aristarchus, but the other two. Demas just drops off the radar. I think it's probably safe to assume that Demas never came back. What was it that tripped him up? Greed. Materialism. The love of stuff. I began by saying the love of stuff is one of the most pernicious and widespread consuming obstacles to spiritual growth for Christians in the Western world, particularly here in America, especially here in Silicon Valley, which is the wealthiest region in North America. I don't know if you knew that or not. I mean, excluding the small gated communities in which people like Bill Gates live up in like Seattle or something, and a couple places like that in New York, this is the biggest large concentration of wealth in America. And Stanford is the crown jewel of it in a lot of ways. And a lot of people come here just because they believe that with a degree from Stanford, they can make big bucks when they graduate. It's an economic gamble for them. They will sink multiple tens of thousands of dollars into their college education in the hopes that it'll pay off down the road. That someday they'll get a six-digit job. That they'll become the CEO of a company. That they'll become an entrepreneur and get some stock options and boom, Bill Gates, look out. My name's in the history books now. I don't know why you're here. I know that it is why many of your peers are here. It was a huge part of the decision-making process. Now, there's nothing intrinsically wrong with wanting to earn a good living. But it all comes down to what's your fundamental motivation. You see, there's a desire to have stuff that is not bad. The desire to have stuff that blesses people. Aristotle espoused it back in his day, and he wasn't even a Christian. In fact, if you've never read Aristotle's thoughts on wealth, I encourage you to do so. The golden mean for Aristotle was a kind of measured generosity. The reason you wanted things was to be able to give them. Aesop put it this way, unused wealth might as well not exist. Wealth exists to be put into circulation, and to be put into circulation in a way that helps people. You know, the Good Samaritan in the Bible, do you know why he's well remembered? It's not because he had a good heart. It's because he had a good heart plus cash. He was able to help somebody's needs. The poorest way to help the poor is by being poor yourself. That doesn't do much for anyone. There's nothing particularly spiritual about poverty. Just like there's nothing particularly spiritual about wealth. What there is something spiritual about is your attitude towards money. Contentment. Wherever I'm at, I can live with it. And I would love to have more so that, A, yes, I could enjoy life more. That would be nice. But also so that I could be a blessing, that I could touch people, that I could serve people, that I could help people, that I could make a difference in the lives of those around me. I don't know why you're here at Stanford. Maybe it's to make bank. I hope that even if that was your original intention, that you would be open to God reforming that in you and shifting from a desire for stuff for its own sake to being here at Stanford to prepare for God's calling on your life, whatever it may be. Maybe it's to be someone who's really got a major dose of the spiritual gift of giving, which is talked about in the Bible. Just like tongues and prophecies and visions. Some people also got the gift of just laying out huge amounts of cash. And God honors that. Maybe that's God's call on your life. Maybe it's just to graduate from here and just take the degree and not do anything that's going to make you a lot of money. But go serve in some really obscure way because it fits God's master plan. I don't know. But I do know this. Greed virtually ensures you will not fulfill God's plan for your life if you allow that to drive you. And so tonight, what I want to ask you to do is to just let any greed within you go. Any desire for money's sake. Now, if you desire money for people's sake, that's great and commendable. It's a noble ambition. But money for money's sake, or money just for self's sake, let it go. Put it to the side, because I promise you it is spiritual poison. And it will kill any hope you have of honoring God with the rest of your life. Join me in prayer.